Virginia Brackett, the author of 15 popular and academic books, discusses her 2019 family memoir, In the Company of Patriots, her journey to discover her father, a World War II hero she never got the chance to know. We'll also find out about her sidetracked path to becoming a writer, from her first published essay in her 20s about her father, through her explorations into laboratory medicine and business.
I had two other degrees before I finally knew what I wanted to do when I grew up. Literature had to be a part of this for me, because when one reads literature, one comes to know oneself better.
Find out how Virginia Brackett, a Park University English professor emeritus in Missouri who helped veterans tell their stories, circled back around to research and write In the Company of Patriots. Today on New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam, and we talked at the Johnson County Public Library in Kansas as part of their 2020 Now Presenting series, actually the last one before the COVID-19 shutdown. We'll start with a reading from the beginning of her book from Sunbury Press, In the Company of Patriots. Here's Virginia Brackett.
I have no memory of my father, Captain Ed Roberts, who was killed by a sniper in Korea when I was 8 months old. Now, over a span of more than a half century, I seek to know him. In-depth knowledge remains unlikely at such distance of both space and time. Still, I want to share anything I may learn of his life and of my own process of discovery. If I succeed, others may benefit. They might also know more of a worthy life, knowledge that generally adds value to our own lives. As to how success can be measured, that will be revealed over time. In addition, I hope readers may comprehend the grace of enlightenment that I received during my journey. I understand the term grace via the Protestant fold in which I matured as undeserved merit. The little knowledge of Ed Roberts that supported the early steps of my journey came from rare stories told by my mother, Helen. I call them stories rather than history because the concept of history suggests facts. Stories, on the other hand, allow for perspective and the addition of new voices in their retelling. Across time's chasm, the clearest shouts become echoes. Details are muted and sense emerges. Facts remain important but are not all crucial to human understanding. Helen didn't talk often about Ed because before I became old enough to ask the inevitable questions, I had another father. My stepfather, a fine, quiet man, loved me as well as my sister and brother without question. Our strong family unit, crafted with care and precision, later welcomed the birth of a new member, his daughter, and our half-sister. Helen likely felt little need to introduce a possibly troubling ghost to our table. Naturally, she and my aunt and uncle referred to Ed from time to time, often with humor and always with respect. When the day came that I asked for information, Helen hid nothing. She had buried Ed physically, but had never intended to bury her memories. Like all memories, however, they were tempered by loss and softened by age. Our one extended conversation grew into an article, the first of my published writing, but I never returned to ask more, to learn more, to write more. Then she was gone. When I think of symbolic acts I've seen in movies or read about in literature that relate to accessing the memories or the thoughts of another, my favorite is the donning of that other's glasses. The act suggests that one might gain access to another's vision. The other day, I pulled my mother's glasses from the drawer where they'd been for many years following her death. I put them on, but far from sharpening my vision, they blurred it. In that manner, I created my own symbolism, understanding that we can never adopt another's vision as our own. Where my mother's vision sharpened her perceptions, it could not sharpen mine. I would need much more than her input to eventually form my own vision of my father. That realization somewhat eases my frustration and, in a sense, my guilt over having waited so long to pursue my elusive goal. I decided that I would also seek to celebrate the journey that coming to know my father represents Honestly, I began this search not only for my father, but for what my clearer vision of him will mean to my sense of self and to that of my children and grandchildren. The new vision will surely be revealed during the journey. Boxes of family artifacts existed, waiting to be opened by new fingers. I knew that any discovery I made might open the gate to a new path on my journey to understand. The family depends upon me to tell the story, which will naturally extend beyond my own field of sight. I felt some trepidation over what I might discover. Details that may not support the label hero often apply to one who dies in service to country. And so, I set to work with a mixed set of skills at hand, those of exploration and adventure, but also of self-defense.
Those are the opening two pages of In the Company of Patriots, Virginia Brackett's look back on her parents' lives, a family memoir, basically. You allude to having written something about them years before, and I read somewhere else that what got you into writing was an essay about your parents. Is that where this started and you've come full circle?
Yes, that was my first true published piece. It actually was a contest that I entered when I lived in Joplin, Missouri. I had returned to school and was getting a second major in business, but also taking lots of English courses and writing because I enjoyed them. And that article did get me started. But, you know, way leads on to way, and life is very messy. And so I didn't really get back to it until I had a little bit more time later, but it was always on my mind.
So what was your first degree?
Medical technology, and which is laboratory work. I was fortunate to work at a hospital in Denver when open heart surgery was first becoming a possibility. So it was a very exciting time, but first was medical technology.
But what made you say, okay, this is enough of this, I'm going to move on?
Just changes in life. I had my family. I helped my first husband manage his medical practice for a while, and then the practice matured, and it was time for me to do something else. I actually got a business degree next. So, yes, I'm very undisciplined, and my mind bounces all over the place. But while I was getting the business degree, I was reminded how much I loved to write. I had done that a lot in high school. And business professors and a law professor, they would take the papers that I wrote and put them outside of their door in baskets as examples for the other students. I did ask them to remove my name from those because nobody wants to be known as the as the professor's favorite writing student. But I just got closer and closer to writing and enjoying it. Took some extra English classes. That's about the time that I wrote the article about my parents. Went through a big life change with a divorce. Met my soon-to-be second and present husband, and he said, you really don't want to get an MBA, do you? You need to get a master's in English. So
that's great. I wondered how that story shifted.
I'm one who really has never wanted to consider any experience I had as wasted time. I have just found a way to go back and use everything that I have learned and a lot of my experiences over time.
Well, you have written a variety of things. You've written a critical companion to Mary Shelley. You've written about the Brontes, Sandra Cisneros, F. Scott Fitzgerald. But then you've also done a lot of what we would call young adult biographies about some very not literary people, John Brown, but I was really struck with Jeff Bezos because that goes all the way back to 2000. And I have to ask, what brought that one on?
That actually was a work under contract.
Okay.
I had signed up to contribute to a series of biographies about well-known people, and these would be in the library for readers.
Are they the same people who got you to write about Steve Jobs?
Yes, that was the same series.
Because that was quite a few years later. So I guess what I'm getting at is that you have a variety of interest and you've written so much about other people. What was the point where you knew that you had to return to your own family and write this book? Did it have to do with your work with the KC Veterans Writing Team at all?
That actually came later. That has been a wonderful blessing in my life that I have become involved with over the last few years. I started working with Writing with Veterans at Park University, but the research on my father is very much related to all of those research works that I had done, because I last had the tools and the knowledge and more or less knew how to go about it. I wish I could point to one certain moment that made me want to do it, but it just was something, as I say, that was kind of growing inside me in discussions in the family, and then, as family will do, at one point all these boxes of artifacts and scrapbooks were dumped in my lap. And so when I started going through them, it occurred to me this would be something important to do for the family. But then I began looking for people who had served with my father, and the incredible outpouring of letters and information and conversations with that group made me think this could be a book that could be interesting to others as well. I really, really wanted to include their stories too.
Well, you mentioned the scrapbooks. There's a little passage. It shows where your parents' own keeping of their history sort of helped this process. Your mother had written in it, "This book was given to me by Miss Marion Louise Rose for graduation, June 1937, Galesburg, Illinois." The references to her high school graduation, which provided a springboard into her college life, a life that she knew she would want to recall. Would you want to read that?
Okay. Well, I should preface this passage because it talks about the gut and bacteria. And these are the kind of conversations I have with my eldest child, who also has a medical technology degree. "Many of my decisions over the years have been made based on gut feelings. I recently discussed with my eldest the fact that research continues to reveal more about intestinal bacteria and their importance to our day-to-day functioning, far beyond the contribution to simple digestion. The bacteria, microbial communities, may be responsible when their environment is right for countering conditions varying from mood disorders to various inflammations. They can also, under unfavorable conditions, contribute to the success of autoimmune diseases and allergic disorders. My daughter and I wonder together about the origin of that phrase, gut feeling, and are both open to the idea that our ancestors may have intuited what science in the post-postmodern age is just now discovering. Because we both hold medical technology degrees, which partly explains why the topic appeals, we have gained a healthy respect through lab work for such organisms invisible to the unaided eye. We personally recorded in the lab growth patterns of bacteria streaked onto the proper agar environment by special metal loops and studied smears from the resultant colonies on slides under microscopes. The close perspective tells us much about the subject of study, but without knowledge of environmental factors, context, we see only a small segment of what we need to know." I turn again to my mother's scrapbook, the context for my parents' early relationship. At this stage, I don't engage the microscopic view. I pull back instead, scanning a broad historical horizon for clues as to their identities and, ultimately, my own. I'm naturally most interested in learning about my father, having never met him. I also investigate his scrapbook with a collection gathered for him by another hand. I later discover that hand is his mother's, not a surprise. My paternal grandmother, Winifred Muzz Aylesbury Roberts, was a major force in her son's life. I recall my mother laughing, although without much humor, about the fact that after Ed's capture and internment in a German prison camp, he wrote to his mother before he wrote to her. Ed's scrapbook has a far more masculine appearance than Helen's, with spiral metal bindings holding together plain black leather covers. The front cover contains a small inset of a watercolor landscape in its lower right corner. Occasional handwritten explanations appear with the artifacts, but more often they simply supply a date or identify an occasion. Information about Ed's Greek Rush experience covers the first page, and much information about his ROTC experience appears later. As I look through his collection, a number of articles and artifacts from his high school and college years are identical to those that Helen saved. The proof that my parents' lives ran on parallel tracks, even in their earliest years, comforts my romantic notions of destiny. I feel more strongly drawn to Helen's book due to her innocent, wide-eyed, and frankly emotional commentary. Even though I lived with my mother, Helen Cost Roberts Ferranti, for many years, I feel certain that following Ed's death, she became a person who greatly differed from the Helen Cost that I will find in the scrapbook. Wouldn't anyone?
In the Company of Patriots by Virginia Brackett, and we're at the Johnson County Public Library. There are a lot of references to Homer and the Odyssey, and this was an Odyssey for you, wasn't it?
It really was. All of the aspects of the hero's journey I thought were important in application to him.
Yeah. You are really looking into the effects that war can have on families. Can you talk some about that?
Well, I can talk from my own experience most clearly. I have worked with veterans and observed some of the challenges. The return to what we might call normal civilization after service can be extremely challenging and very difficult, and some don't accomplish that very well. And my father was captured in the Battle of the Bulge and was in a prison camp for a while, along with many, many, many others. He was made to stand barefoot in the snow. He had to confront some disagreements among the men that he was in prison with. He ended up escaping, having an audience with General Patton afterwards, because Patton's son-in-law happened to be in that same prison camp. He went through all of this, came back home, was celebrated. He was very well known in his small hometown. A job was waiting for him at Knox College, which he just loved. That college was so important to both he and my mother. He had a son at home that he came back for, had two more children, and then went back into the service. He was going to Japan. We were all going to follow him later. I was too young to travel, so he left, got to California, received orders that there was a mess in Korea. He would be going there instead. He arrived in Korea in July, and then he was killed the following January. I wondered a lot about what my mother thought about that. She seemed in every way supportive of this decision. I did ask her at one time how she could go through what she did, you know, when he died. And she just said, well, so many women were going through it. So I think part of that might have just been the time in which all this took place. But obviously she was plunged into deep grief and really needed help from people around her to come out of it. But her reaction, she had three children, was then to go on and make a life for her children. And as I say, I didn't miss anything in life due to my father's absence. So,
well, you had another father.
Yes.
How old were you when your mother remarried?
I was four.
Yeah.
So the effect on our family was tremendous for her. My brother did know him, so he grew up with some knowledge of his father. But as far as how my father might have reacted, you know, later on, I can't know that. I know that he did not feel good about the war in Korea. His letters were filled with comments about the fact they should not be there. He had been very dedicated to the task in World War II, but the experience in Korea was something different.
What do you think drew him back?
I think some people are just born to leadership, and they'll feel a call. Depending on the time or the era that they live, it may be in different ways, but I really think he loved the experience. A part of what I was worried about when I began writing, or not really worried, but kind of steeled myself that, well, surely I was going to hear something negative about this man from all these people that served with him. That never happened. Down to the last person, they just simply talked about what a great leader he was. A lot of them thought that he had saved their lives at the Battle of the Bulge because he made the choice for them to lay down their arms and surrender when they were surrounded. And his leadership in Korea was really just unquestioned. I write about a man who served with him in Korea and was so dedicated to his memory that he wrote an article about my father's last day in the 90s. Now, my father had been killed in the 50s, so that many decades later, he was still very devoted to his memory and ended up corresponding with me and had made a scrapbook based on my father. So I think there was just something about the service that he could not get away from. Other people really admired him and appreciated him, and I guess we all like to be where we're admired and appreciated.
Yeah. One of the men that you talked to said that he had a group of soldiers who were kind of unruly, but he would talk to each of them individually and get them to talk about themselves and share their own stories. And that had to make people feel valued, that somebody above them was interested in who they were, not just what they were doing there, but who they were as human beings.
And I could tell from his letters back from Korea that he was totally vested in the men that he was serving with and would just become very upset, you know, when any of them were wounded or one was killed in a training accident at one point. And I could tell he was just heartbroken over that.
So, in The Company of Patriots by Virginia Brackett, out of all the people you've communicated with to gather this story, because there are so many of them in here, can you share what to you were the highlights?
There was a man I came to know very well who actually welcomed me and my husband into reunions of their unit. And you have to understand that veterans from World War II and Korea, they would have reunions every single year, particularly the World War II veterans would. And so they were very dedicated to one another and to getting together. And from the first moment that I contacted him, Frank Troutman, he was so enthusiastic about corresponding with me. When we attended their first reunion, he introduced us. My husband, who's a Vietnam veteran, and I were just treated like royalty there. He probably gave me the best insight, actually, into the unit and the group and how they reacted together in World War II. And then probably the gentleman already mentioned from Korea who shared such specific information with me about my father. I found out again that he'd written this article about his last day and was, as far as I know, really the last person to speak with my father. And so he also had a lot of amazing information to share.
What was something that you thought you were on the track of and then you ran up against a death, the one that might have hit you the most? Because a lot of people did pass away in the process.
Well, both of those gentlemen have passed away, which was heartbreaking because that was before the book came out. I think everyone that I talked to had passed away. But I think while I was doing the writing, the one that touched me most was a man who had been a chaplain who knew my father very well and said that he had written a letter to my mother after my father had been killed and was going to try to find a copy of that and send it to me. And I never heard from him. And then eventually I got a note from his wife to let me know that he had passed away, and she knew he had wanted to find this letter but had not been able to. And I had a message from him, and I kept that recording for a couple of years.
Yeah,
so I could still listen to him.
Well, Virginia, I've picked out all the stuff for you to read. Would you like to finish with something that you pick out?
Okay. This passage follows my having mentioned a poem that my maternal grandfather wrote to his wife on the occasion of an anniversary that they had. This was after their son had been killed, in which he used the phrase that what we needed to do was to follow the right, and that he thought that because they had done that, that they had had a very strong relationship. Helen lived decades beyond Ed. She raised his children to follow the right and taught me that we can at the most influence only the moment at hand through our reaction to life's challenges. Despite my parents' shared love of lists and planning and dreaming of what might be, they knew those pleasurable exercises occupy an important but not resolute position in this messy business of life. I know now that what I've missed all these years are memories of Ed Roberts. I hadn't known him to miss him. I instead take a moment each day to call up a remembrance, to hold in my mind the treasure he gifted to others. And he had been known, as Dr. Bell remarked, by many people of whom my mother would never even be aware. That included not only those who shared a close relationship with him, but also those lightly touched by his presence. No doubt Ed Roberts appears in photos that exist in other people's treasured personal collections. Some in possession of the photos can identify him, others cannot. He abides with or without a name in stories told around holiday tables in various U.S. states, in war mythology, in Belgrade or St. Vith or Hamelburg or Pusan, Seoul or Hamhung, stories emerging at odd, unpredictable moments. People note his name while walking a cemetery, in the Knox College and other Korean War exhibits, and more generally, in the bronze faces of the Korean War Memorial in Washington, D.C. Like all of us, he is a spark in history's light, shining brighter than some, less bright than others. And if I must spend time thinking about how he died, I can think with some confidence not about whether or for how long he lived beyond his wound, whether he was in pain, felt sorrow or anger, had thoughts of me and others in his family, but rather that he believed that because he died, another person would not. Thus, I face the end of my project, my metaphorical suitcase more filled than when I began, the original possessions liberally replaced. Where I began with questions, some admittedly petulant and naive, some divisive, most with rational intent, I depart with few definitive answers. However, I now possess a long list of recognized gifts from both of my parents. Although I thought I did not know my father when I began this journey, I realize many years and hundreds of pages later that I knew him all along. I may have lacked a specific memory to call to mind, but I knew him through my talents, my strengths and weaknesses, and through his influence on my mother, an influence that surely must be strong within his daughter, as Helen passed along much to me. I've always had access to Ed Roberts, as he is a real and intimate presence in my biological being, my DNA coding, of course, but also deep in my psyche. Like sound waves that broadly warp through space from a single cry, his story and its effect ripple through time. I echo his cry, as do my grandchildren, as will their own. That inheritance is what I claim at last in gratitude, with clear recognition of its value. Thank you.
Virginia Brackett at the Johnson County Public Library in Kansas, reading for their 2020 Now Presenting series from her book, In the Company of Patriots, from Sunbury Press. For links, visit newletters.org, a production of New Letters Magazine at UMKC. Our music is by composer Kevin McLeod from Incompetech.com. Today's show was produced with Shannon Ashley, Samantha Rucker, and Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air.